Welcome back to 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. Call in 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. We have a guest author in with us this morning, Jean Hoff. We're going to talk a little bit to her and about her book that she has written and about what she's done, some of her experience in her work, and how that can apply to you this morning. And we've got more news stories that we're going to cover as well, and our Ukrainian update coming in just a little bit. Again, call in 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. Jean, how you doing this morning?
Good morning. Sun is shining. I'm happy.
All right, good, good. Well, Jean, could you go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you do as an author now, retired now, but tell us a little bit about what you did and about your book. What led you to write this book, and what's it about?
The book is about end-of-life planning, which seems to be a term that terrifies people. But if you think that life is, you're born, you live, and you die, it simplifies it. There are things that I believe people need to take care of between now and then. And that's the name of my book, Between Now and Then. And that came out of a conversation with a boss I had many years ago. It was a casual conversation, not connected to anything like this. And he said, I'm not afraid of dying, but I am afraid of what's between now and then. And 29 years later, when I needed a title for my book, there it was. So the book has 5 chapters: legal, financial, funeral and burial, record keeping, and personal. And in each chapter, I address the question, what do you plan to do with the rest of your time between now and then?
So as a financial planner, you worked with people basically doing wills and different things like that?
Well, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a financial planner, but I worked very closely with both type people, and I also sold cemetery property. So I got to see a lot of people as they made decisions for themselves and for their families. And I got to see also that they don't necessarily understand the choices they've made financially or legally. And the book, it's like a prep course for an SAT. It's filled with the questions you need to ask the professionals when you're sitting across the desk and a lawyer says, what do you want in your will? And when you speak to this lawyer, you will be maximizing the time if you know the answer to the question, which is not a one-word question.
So what would be some of the answers to that?
Well, I'll give you a very short example. A woman went to a lawyer and said, I want my will to say, I divide my entire estate, she was a widow, equally among my 3 children. And he wrote the will that way. And she died, and her daughter got everything. The everything turned out to be only an IRA. All her money was in an IRA. And an IRA is like a life insurance policy in that it has a beneficiary. And the money passes directly to the named beneficiary. Has nothing to do with a will. In fact, the woman didn't even need a will. So the question comes up, did the lawyer ask her, where is your money so that I can write the appropriate document? If she had said, all my money is in an IRA, I live with my daughter, I don't have any personal expenses, he might have said, you really don't need a will because. But I don't know if that happened. All I know is that the daughter got everything, and it caused a terrible breach in the family because the sons didn't understand. Well, mother's will said equally, and we got nothing. Why did that happen? Because of the IRA. So all the woman said was, I want my will to say this. He wrote it that way, and it all went wrong.
So that must have been, I guess, a financial planner that organized things that way, because a lawyer really just does the will then.
Yes, she had her money with a financial planner, and it was a good choice in an IRA because it passed outside the will. But the will needs to be written in conjunction with your money.
Right, and it seems to be a lack of communication there. Well, your book kind of being a guide for people who are preparing for that day. And we kind of, everything we talk about here, all the news stories here on It's a New Day, we kind of always touch on the scriptural aspect, the Christian morning, Christian conservative news talk show. And we always touch on the Christian aspect. We always touch on the what does this mean, whatever's happening in the news, what does this mean for you, the listener? What does this mean for, you know, how can it help you? How can it educate you? What is the scriptural impact, and does that relate to the world of news and politics and all that? But even so much so to have you on the program here this morning, helping people prepare for some of their last days, kind of fits in a little bit with that as well. So tell me a little bit more about your book, if you could. Where can we find it? And tell us maybe a little bit more of the information in there.
The book is available on Amazon. I believe it's also available on BarnesandNoble.com. And I just started a website, which is Gene Seehoff Author. And books can be purchased through PayPal on that.
Okay. So tell me a little bit. So it's a guide to help people who are reaching the end of their life, and they're thinking about a will, different things like that, and how they should do it. What's some of the other helpful information that they will find in the book?
There are four questions that I believe that are important to ask a client. Whether the first one is the lawyer who says, what do you want your will to say? The financial planner will ask you, what do you want your money to do for you? The funeral director will say, what kind of arrangements do you want to be made for your funeral or for your loved one? And the doctors will say, what kind of health care do you want at the end of your life when you're literally dying? These are questions that require a lot of thinking, a lot of conversation, a lot of investigation, and decisions. And I recommend that people do their own research. If you want to have a cemetery burial, drive around the country in the summer and pick a cemetery. Don't let your wife wait till the day you die and it's snowy or it's hot and have to go out. If you want a church funeral, put it in writing. Let your family know that this is what you want, because there's a trend now to not have funerals in churches anymore, which I think is a shame, but that's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there is. There's a growing trend. Well, what is the trend? Again, someone who's kind of been in the business, what is the growing trend then against that?
People will say the funerals are expensive and they don't want to spend the money. And a lot of churches charge a certain fee, which goes as part of the funeral expense. Cremation, of course, costs less, and that's most churches allow that now. But I believe it's a personal choice. If you want certain things for your funeral, like my mother was a church organist, so I grew up going to church, listening to beautiful church music. That's critical to me, what kind of music would be at the service. If it matters to you, then you need to tell your family. If it doesn't matter, let them choose when the time comes. So if any of these things matter to you, then it's up to you to see that they happen, because they will not happen by themselves.
Okay, how would they be able to, so how do they begin the process to do that? To make sure that what they want to happen at the end of their life, in their will, or how to basically bring all of those different aspects together and to get things to happen the way they want it to.
I think conversation in the family is critical. I've heard stories about family holiday dinners where the father will say, listen, I want to talk to you about what I would like for my funeral. And they all say, oh, daddy, not today. This is a holiday. We'll talk about it later. Well, when is later? The next day he goes out and gets hit by a bus. It happens. I mean, it sounds funny, but it's the truth. Things happen in life. And I'm a planner. I believe in being prepared. I guess that's that Girl Scout thing from when I was a kid. And I think it's planning and conversations to let people know what you want and also what you don't want. And that's where the end of life planning comes in your healthcare. If you don't want to be kept alive at all costs and have horrible medical procedures done to you, then you have to tell your family. You have to put it in writing.
So we have Gene Hoff. If you just tuned in, we have Gene Hoff with us, an author of the book Between Now and Then, helping you plan for when that final day comes, whether that's having a will or bringing all a will and your financial planning together and making sure that you get done what you would like to done what you would like to get done. Gene, again, tell us your website. We just have about a minute left here. Just tell us about your website and where people can find your book again, and if they want to contact you, how they can do that.
The book is available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. My website just went up yesterday, so I'm not too sure about how it's going to work, but it's going to be GeneCHoffAuthor.com. And what was the other question?
The other question was, how can people get in contact with you?
My email address. It's Magic Genie, spelled MGKGNE, six letters, at comcast.net.
Okay. All right. Well, Gene Hoff with us at the program. We're going to get back to more of the news stories in this next break, and then we have our Ukrainian update coming at 8:30 on It's New Day, 1180 WFYL. Thank you so much for being on the program this morning, Gene.
Thank you for the opportunity.
No, it's a pleasure. All right. We will be back. Stay tuned. Welcome back. It's a new day at 1180 WFYO, working for your liberty. Call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Owlock and Mike Levin's on the mic this morning as we get to more news stories. Now, we're looking at FoxNews.com. FBI figures tweaked to show phony increase in mass shootings, the report says. Crime stats published by the FBI and relied upon by the media distort the gun violence and leave the public with the impression mass shooting incidents are a much bigger threat than they really are, according to a criminologist and Second Amendment scholar. Now, it's interesting because this article, again, you look at the headline, FBI figures tweaked to show phony increase in mass shootings, report says. But if you read a little farther down, it's actually interesting because you look at it, and I don't think it's so much that the FBI had phony numbers on this, but that the press simply reported wrong and read the numbers wrong. Because if you have to read through the whole article. So what does that say? And this is Fox News, okay? Which everyone, and again, they report on a lot of good things, but they are susceptible to the press bug of not reporting correctly and wanting to sensationalize things. Because here, I'm looking a little farther down. James Allen Fox, a professor of criminology, law, and public policy at Northeastern University, agreed that the FBI numbers were being misinterpreted to overstate the incidents and risks of mass shootings. But he blamed the media, not the FBI. Quote, "The media misinterpreted the report," Fox said. Quote, "An active shooter incident is not the same as a mass shooting." And the allegation there is that in the report, there is a difference between what they call active shooter incidents and a mass shooting. And that distinction is very important. We'll get into that in just a bit. But Fox said using news reports to compile crime statistics is not a reliable method, of course, and said his own research has found no upward trend in mass shootings. Quote, "Since 1976, there have been ups and downs in incidents, but there has been no trend, upward or downward, in mass shootings." Now, let's go ahead and get to the clarification between mass killings and active shooter incidents in the report. However, an introduction from a copy of the report, the authors did appear to differentiate between, quote, mass killings and, quote, active shooter incidents. In 2013, the president signed into law the Investigative Assistance for Violent Crimes Act of 2012, which granted the attorney general the authority to assist in the investigation of violent acts and shootings occurring in a place of public use. And in the investigation of mass killings and attempted mass killings at the request of an appropriate law enforcement official of a state or political subdivision, read the report. To provide further clarity on these threats, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, in 2014, initiated a study of active shooter incidents. This is their findings in a September press release. "We believe the information contained in this study can benefit anyone who could potentially be in an active shooter situation, like emergency personnel, employees of retail corporations and other businesses, educators and student, government and military personnel, members of the general public, etc., by giving them a better layout for these incidents to play out. James Allen Fox, and then that's where he said, that's where we get into the difference of an active shooter and mass shooting. This report doesn't really, well, let's look a little higher. The media most often took the numbers at face value, allowing for the perception of an increase in mass shootings and deaths from them. A counter report by CPRC shows that if the biases and errors were corrected, the Bureau's data would show that annual growth rate for homicides and mass shootings has been cut in half. He suspects manipulation and not merely mistakes. And this is the news. This is the news spin on this. The administration has obviously been willing to do a lot to push for gun control with everything from Operation Choke Point to Fast and Furious, which they have. And this is just part of that push. However, in an introduction from a copy of the report, the authors appear to differentiate between mass killings and active shooter incidents. So be careful of the news out there, because It's interesting, and I like Fox News in a lot of ways. They report on a lot of things, but there's a differentiation. They don't even touch on it in the article, a differentiation between mass shooting incidents and active shooting incidents, which, again, this law professor at Northeastern University says is really the crux, and it's a misinterpretation of the report. Until people really get their hands on the report to analyze it, which they have in the past, the media just misinterpreting and putting out this headline, FBI figures tweak to show phony increase in mass shootings. Well, give us the numbers to look at. Give us the information to look at to make that differentiation. Kind of similar a little bit to what happened with the DOJ report in Ferguson. They said, well, we found that they gave us numbers, but they didn't give us all the numbers. And you could even say they misinterpreted the numbers. We're seeing that a little bit here. This could become a big story. Of course, because the news are wanting, and rightfully so, because Obama has done so much in the realm of gun control, to try and with everything from, you know, his administration with the ATF just backtracking on trying to ban AR-15 ammo and really using mass shootings as a reasoning to go, see, this is why we don't need any guns. This is why your right is endangering people. And thus the argument ensues. And is it really? Is it a freedom that should be imposed? What do you think should be imposed upon? 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1180, or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. We've just got a couple minutes left before we go into a break, and we're going to have our Ukrainian update. But this is not something that this is something that we have to hold the news media accountable for. We need to hold them accountable, because sometimes they're the only report of the news that we have to rely on. They are the only ones with access, necessarily. Now, with the advent of technology, that's changing, but the only ones with access to places like the briefing room in the White House, or special meetings with President Obama, or political figures. They're the only ones with access because they are the press, and we need to hold them accountable. Because what they're doing, sometimes in trying to make a story, has an effect on all of our lives. All of our lives. Not just in Ferguson, but even right here in Philly. With the report coming out with police officers shooting 400 people in 7 years, according to the DOJ report, and that being spun, and how the DOJ is politicized, it's, you throw your hands up after a while. And after a while, you go, what is the answer? Well, there is an answer, and we've talked about this before on the program, and we'll touch on that in just a minute, but here's a hint. There is an answer in the scripture for it. There is an answer in the scripture for all this. We've got the Ukrainian update coming up next. We'll touch a little bit on this, and then we'll bring in Roman Andrejczyk will be in studio with us. You're listening to It's a New Day, 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening on this happy Wednesday. We'll be back. Welcome back to 1180 WFYL. It's a New Day. 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. Join the conversation. We have Roman Andrejczyk in studio, who's just back from a two-day conference in Washington on the situation in Ukraine, sponsored by a U.S. congresswoman. We'll have her name, and we're going to talk about a report from the Ukrainian ambassador to the United States on what needs to happen and some information key to what's happening in Ukraine. Again, welcome to the program. Michael Evans out lock and Roman Andrejczyk in studio. Roman, it's always a pleasure to have you in the studio.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, let's talk about this report. So the congresswoman who sponsored this event, could you just reiterate her name?
She is Marcy Kaptur from Toledo, Ohio. She's been in Congress for quite many years. I've met with her in prior years, 5-6 years ago in Ohio. And now this time she sponsored at the Raber Building, at the House Building in Washington, a two-day session sponsored with other organizations. But she was the leader in organizing this thing and providing the facilities. The conference was held on the 18th and 19th March. 18th March was basically an evening session with multiple speakers. One of them was our Congressman Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania, Senator Levin, Senator Cruz, and multiple other speakers. That was the evening, and then cocktails and refreshments. In the morning, there was a session with, I believe, a total of 12 speakers. The e-speech was very short, about 20 minutes. The speakers were from all walks of life, U.S. Department of Energy, Department of Commerce, think tanks, and others. And the opening remarks were made by the Ukrainian ambassador to the United States. And what I'd like to do is share with you what he said. I'll read most of it, make some comments, because that pretty well summarizes what the situation in Ukraine is and what Ukraine is doing about it.
And it's a unique look into the situation. Again, this is from the ambassador from Ukraine to the United States, a letter given to the members of this conference. So, Roman, go ahead. Let's look at this letter. I've got it in front of me. There's a lot of information on here. Let's go ahead and walk through it.
Right. Basically, he opened the session and read what I'm about to read. I'm going to read most of it, not everything. I'm going to address some of the key issues. He basically said in the very beginning, thank all of you here today for ongoing interest in Ukraine. For sure, you are aware of the current situation in Ukraine. These are truly challenging times for our people. We are facing unprecedented aggression from the neighboring country. And the simple reason for this is Kremlin opposes Ukraine's desire to become a fully independent, European-oriented, prosperous country. Successful Ukraine is perceived as a threat to the Kremlin because it challenges the current autocratic model. Russian expansions and revisions agenda goes well beyond Ukraine, though. Today, Ukraine is fighting to protect its sovereignty, territorial integrity, and the security of the whole of Europe. Ukrainians are dying for the values of freedom and democracy, values that are the bedrock of the United States of American existence. To be sure of one thing, what the Ukrainian people want more than anything else is peace. We want to live in peace and be a full sovereign European nation. Ukrainian government has repeatedly demonstrated its readiness and commitment to a peaceful solution to the conflict. We initiated unilateral ceasefires where we came to the negotiation table without any precondition, and we implemented each commitment we made in the agreement. But Russia and Russian-sponsored terrorism has systematically violated the Minsk I and Minsk II agreements, according to NATO. There are 12,000 regular Russian troops in Ukrainian territory in the Donbas region, and mercenaries continue to pour across the border.
And let me go ahead and just and stop you for there, and then we'll continue reading. Just to clarify, if you just tuned in, we're reading a report from the Ukrainian ambassador to the United States. This is a report that was issued at a two-day conference sponsored by U.S. Congresswoman in Washington, Roman Andrejczyk, with us in studio, retired U.S. Army colonel, native-born Ukrainian, naturalized U.S. citizen, who is going over this and attended the conference. So we're reading this. The Minsk 1 and Minsk 2 agreements were ceasefires, and basically how this ambassador is telling all those who are reading this letter that Russia is heavily involved, and Ukraine's desire to become part of the European Union, I suppose.
Right. What they want to do is develop their nation in the European model to be a democratic, prosperous, non-corrupt nation, which right now, up to this point, it has not been because of different situations and obviously pressure from Russia until the Russian aggression. So I'll continue reading. The next thing he mentioned is several key points. And I'll continue reading what he said. The conflict in the East is a devastating humanitarian tragedy and puts a tremendous strain on our country. And then he covers several points. More than 6,000 of our people, and to be more correct right now, as of today, there are 6,600 people, soldiers and civilians, have died to defend Ukraine's territory, integrity, and independence. More than 15,000 people have been wounded. Over 1 million people have been forced to leave their home due to the war in the East and the illegal annexation of Crimea. These include some of our most valued, vulnerable citizens. Over 60% of those are pensioners and 12% are children. In Crimea, the Tatar population is subject to systematic discrimination, threats, abuse of human rights, and selective justice. Tens of thousands of Tatars have had to leave their home. The second forced exile of Tatars from their homeland by the Kremlin. I'll add this, my own comment. The first one was during Stalin's era, where the Tatars were chased and taken out of Crimea, and most of them were sent to Siberia.
And the Tatars are a unique people group, right, associated with Ukraine, and that has been in the news before, their discrimination. So let's keep reading this report.
Yeah. The conflict in the East has also had a massive economic impact on the country, and there are several points that he stressed in there. Ukraine has lost about 20% of its economy, and its industrial sector output has fallen by nearly 11% in 2014 due to the war, or by 30-40% in the Donetsk-Luhansk region. This is the war is taking place in there. The infrastructure damage and loss of economic output from the region under occupation, including Crimea, is massive. More than 10,000 apartment buildings were destroyed in the Donetsk region alone. Numerous industrial plants, airports, roads, and energy infrastructure have been destroyed. The estimated value of the energy assets stolen by the Russian Federation Crimea is $300 billion, just in there alone. I'll expand that a little bit more on my own. There are gas storage tanks in Crimea that Ukraine bought from Russia. Those were valued at $3 billion. When the Russians took over Crimea, they took over those $3 billion worth of storage tanks, and then they asked Ukraine to pay the money for them. So they have it, and they still expect Ukraine to pay for it. It's just crazy.
They're holding their own property ransom, and they're wanting them to pay for
it. It's amazing.
$300 billion, yes, in energy assets. And there's more.
It's actually the value of energy assets, because there was around the Crimea area and in Crimea itself and in the Black Sea, there are large deposits of oil and gas. So that's basically taking that into account.
And we've also, if you want to call in, you have a question for Roman, you call it 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK. There's more in this report, as unfortunate as that sounds. Why don't we keep going through it?
Yeah, Ukraine spent around $5 million a day just to defend its territory from the Russian invasion. The war triggered a very serious economic crisis, which was worsened by poor previously economic governance. This is the government's, I'm adding this my own, this is the government's of President Yanukovych, who was a Russian puppet. Ukraine alone cannot stop the annexation agenda of the largest army in Europe, European continent. International support to Ukraine is indispensable to protect Europe and prevent an even larger humanitarian economic crisis at the heart of Europe. We are extraordinarily thankful to the United States Congress and to the administration for the role they played over the last year. I'll add a comment to that. I would say more thankful to the Congress, which has been very supportive of this. That's my own comments, because the administration hasn't done much. In fact, I'll add one more thing. This week, another resolution was passed by Congress, to provide military aid to Ukraine. 348 congressmen voted for it and 48 against it. So you can see the overwhelming support of Congress for providing arms to Ukraine.
And we're approaching a break here, but then further in, we're going to get into this in our next break, that there is a question of support that he poses, and he has 3 points in support that the ambassador from Ukraine to the United States asks and puts forward to the U.S. government. Of course, the Obama administration working against any kind of help for the Ukrainians and as far as arms, which is what they really need because of the economic instability caused by Russia's invasion, really, of Ukraine. We're going to have more of that as we get back here to the program. It's a new day with Roman Andrejczyk, WFYL 1180, working for your liberty. We'll be back. Welcome back to 1180 WFYL. It's a new day here. Go ahead, call in 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, with your question for Roman on what's happening in Ukraine. We're looking at a report from Ukrainian ambassador to the United States talking about the current situation in Ukraine, and this is addressed to the U.S. government, what the U.S. government needs to do in supporting Ukraine and what is most important. We're going through this document right now. 1180 WFYL, it's a new day. Again, those numbers, 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Roman, let's keep on going. We just reached the point in this document where, and this is what it says. This is a letter, again, at this conference that Roman attended and just came back from, a two-day conference in Washington, D.C., and this is what it says right before we get into the points. We ask the U.S. government to continue and increase its support, in particular in the following 3 directions. And this is from the ambassador from Ukraine to the United States. Roman?
Yes, the 3 points are, first, Ukraine needs more financial and humanitarian assistance. Second, Ukraine needs defensive military equipment and training to protect lives of military and civilians, stop the progression of Russian troops, and contain the conflict. Third, sanctions against Russia should be maintained and increased if Russia continues to fail to implement Minsk II agreement. Then he goes into the area of what's been happening in Ukraine. We understand that international support can only be effective if the Ukrainian government is diligent in its effort to stabilize the economy, reform the country, fight corruption, improve transparency and accountability, improve the rule of law, and create the conditions for the return of economic growth and prosperity. This is the common objective of President Poroshenko, who right now is the current president, Prime Minister Yatsenyuk, and the cabinet of ministers and the pro-European constitutional majority in the parliament. A lot has been achieved. Ukraine organized free and fair democratic presidential parliamentary elections. By the way, I want to mention to that I was an observer in Ukraine for those elections, the presidential ones, resulting in a pro-European reformist majority. Ukraine signed and ratified the association agreement with the European Union, with an educated force, significant labor cost advantage, and a deep and comprehensive free trade agreement with the EU, Ukraine is well positioned to benefit from close integration with the European market.
And the Ukrainian workforce is very well educated.
Very well.
People across Ukraine, they're all
right,
very well educated.
Most of them have finished, if not all of them, high school. And a lot of them are in college, finished college, well-educated, well-read force. So there is a lot of potential in the people to become not one of those economies where you just go in assembly line and put screws and bolts, but to develop things, especially in Ukraine, the engineering and technical area and software are very strong. Those are my comments. But
yeah, no, go ahead. Let's continue looking.
Yeah, Ukraine's reform agenda is aimed not only to cope with macroeconomic deterioration, but to drive major structural changes and end the old ways of doing business. Our priorities are national security and defense, microeconomic and financial stability, energy independence, European integration, and good governance. This reform agenda has been adopted by a key part of the IMF program to help stabilize Ukraine's economy and strengthen the financial and banking system. This means, and here are the following points, tackling corruption at all levels, increase the transparency and efficiency of state-owned properties, bring commercial activity out of the shadows of the economy, implement fiscal reform to broaden the tax base, and create the right condition for business and investors. Ukraine is going now through big changes, but it is also time for a great opportunity. We are confident in bright future occurring because the truth is in our side and because we are on the right side of history. We fight for real independence and freedom, as well as prosper life in the great European family. The Ukrainian government has taken critical action to cut the state deficit in half compared to last year. Combined deficit, including the state budget and financing of the national oil and gas company Naftogaz, was reduced from 14% of GDP last year to a projected 70% this year. We also have begun to reduce the pension deficits with changes to create a fairer system. Energy sector, by the way, it's my comment again, the energy sector is one of the key sectors in Ukraine that needs to be reformed, especially the Naftogaz company that provides the energy. And he says the energy sector reform, energy independence are key challenges. Ukraine historically has the most inefficient and corrupt energy sector in Europe. In order to change the situation, we have taken decisive action to reduce the sector, increase the energy efficiency, and reduce and diversify our gas imports.
And Roman, I'm sorry, I want to stop you there. We only have a few minutes left, and I know there's some other things we want to get to before the program ends, but I want to basically, I've been reading ahead in this, and what it seems is he's going through the economic situation in Ukraine, because he talks about how the IMF has essentially dispersed funds, and I'm guessing that's in a form of a loan, and what this information is here is for is that possibly, maybe even to get financial support or some form of a loan from the United States to show what Ukraine is doing to strengthen their economy in tackling corruption and making sure that they have a stable macroeconomic environment so that they can support themselves and merit more support from us. But I want to go back, and then we have very interesting a prayer in the Ukrainian Catholic Church, which you attend, Roman. We want to have you read that at the end of the program. But I want to touch back on those points of what they need the U.S. government to continue to do to increase its support. The Ukraine needs more financial and humanitarian assistance. Ukraine needs defensive military equipment and training to protect lives of militaries and civilians, stop the progression of Russian troops, and contain the conflict, and sanctions. Third, sanctions against Russia that should be maintained and increased if there's failure to implement Minsk II, and that's a ceasefire agreement. So we've got about 2 minutes and 30-some-odd seconds here, so I want to talk about that just a little bit more. How crucial, Roman, is it that not just financial and humanitarian assistance, but defensive military equipment, essentially lethal aid, how important is that for Ukraine at this time?
Well, Ukraine needs an equal chance to be able to fight the Russian well-trained, well-equipped military. As I mentioned that report earlier, there are 12,000 Russian soldiers. By now, I think they're even more than that. In addition to what I call the terrorists, which are Russian people or mercenaries brought to that area. So in order to level the playing field, Ukraine needs help in that particular area. Before we end this program, like Mike mentioned, I'd like to read a prayer that people throughout the United States and Catholic churches do. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. At this hour, we fervently pray that your Holy Spirit may inspire men and women in Ukraine to become peacemakers. May they seek reconciliation and dialogue and end the violence, confronting and killing. May they restore tranquility to their nation and restore human rights, democratic principles, and religious liberty to the troubled land. God, our Father, we beseech you to comfort the suffering, heal the wounded, and accept the souls of the departed into the heavenly kingdom. And may the Most Holy Mother of God extend her blessing mantle to protect over Ukraine. And may each of us always live our lives and instruments in your peace. Amen. Slava Ukraini. God bless Ukraine. God bless America.
And this is a prayer that's read at the Ukrainian Catholic churches across the nation in America and as well as in Ukraine. I think that's important to end the program on. It's 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. Roman, thank you so much for being with us for the Ukrainian update again today.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Well, tune in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 7 to 9 for It's a New Day. And then we have It's a New Day, We the People on Friday, 7 to 9. We'll be back tomorrow. Jesus Christ is Lord. Remember that with all these things. Take care.